This is News in No Time at Gordon. On today's roundtable, Jackson and Sharpton say stay away from the pump, and a Duke lacrosse player is reinstated. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our bureau in New York City, Robert George. He's an editorial writer at the New York Post. Marcelo Suarez Orozco, he's co-director of immigration studies at New York University. He joins us from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. And from Harvard University Studios in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the television show Beat the Press, which is seen in the Boston area. All right, folks, thanks very much. Greatly appreciated. I want to talk about something that we heard in the A segment there and extended, if you will, and that is the cry for social engagement. We are starting to see rumblings of that across the board within the African-American community in different corners. We obviously have seen it with the immigration battle that's ongoing, the call for a boycott of BP gas stations around the country by Reverend Jackson and Reverend Sharpton and others, suggesting that there is a need to, in the words of Al Sharpton, give British Petroleum, that's BP, a good spanking. It will send a message to other companies that they feel are not dealing with the African-American community in the right way. And we should note that British Petroleum has said that they believe that this is simply Jackson playing the race card and that they do, in fact, deal with black employees and blacks in general in a non-discriminatory way. We'll get into some of the intricacies in just a minute. But Robert George, the sense of social engagement.
Well, yeah, I think there is a sense, obviously, starting, certainly being emphasized after Katrina last year, that put once again a spotlight on the problems of some of the problems and concerns of Black America and the poor in general. I may not necessarily agree with the particular approach that Reverend Jackson and Reverend Sharpton are taking, for example, with BP, but I think there's definitely a realization that there are certain, from their perspective, certain unmet needs that that need to be addressed. And I think it's actually, generally speaking, a good idea if people are aroused and focused and on focusing on issues of whether it's education or employment or economic opportunity.
Callie, whether it's a question of becoming a mentor as the Essence Cares program is asking people to do, or driving past a BP gas station, if you agree with the tenets of what Reverend Jackson and Reverend Sharpton and others are saying about BP, the idea of getting involved in some way, shape, or form, do you see it growing, or do you believe this is just rhetoric?
I don't think it ever stopped. Let me just put it that way. There's always been folks who have been heavily involved and trying to get others involved. I think what the problem has been, maybe with the post-civil rights generation African-American community, is that they did not live through some of those, you know, effective marches and boycotts. And so they're confused and or don't believe that there a response in that way, a public response in that way, can really be effective. And so you have a lot of people walking around here who are ahistorical, who don't know that a lot of this stuff happened because people hit the streets, and they don't see the connection between hitting the streets, putting their voices together, and making it happen. That's why I think that the immigration marches most recently are really eye-opening, not only for folks who didn't know about the issues involved specifically with that, but for folks who realize, hey, numbers do count. Some of the leaders who've been out here saying that if you lift your voices together, it makes a difference. People can hear you. There is power. I think that that has really maybe awakened some people who may have been sleeping on the job with regard to feeling that a public response to social injustices can be effective.
Marcelo, how do you engage people who heretofore have not been engaged? What do you think is the best process? Because as we saw, while there were a lot of immigrants who hit the streets and made noise, just as was the case in the civil rights movement, and always throughout history, more people stay at home than hit the streets.
True. It's really about the notion of ownership. It's really about the notion of just the tremendous potential there is today for organization, which is really enormous. In addition to Katrina, we have the Iraq situation. We have health care costs. We're going to be paying $4 a gallon now for gasoline at a time when these companies are making enormous, unprecedented earnings. BP is just last quarter made over $5 billion There is a malaise, Ed. There is a discontent. There is the call to wake up around social engagement, around instilling a sense of ownership about these shared problems, these problems that are not going away. These are structural problems that we have in our economy, in education, in our energy policy. We need to wake up.
Mm-hmm. Robert George, Reverend Jackson has been talking, quite frankly, and not getting a lot of traction until now, about what he calls energy exploitation of the poor in this country. They're encouraging people to turn away from BP, cut up their gas cards, because none of the upper-level executives are black, and there is no black ownership among the U.S. distributors here. We should note that a black distributor sued BP. Roughly 600 U.S. distributors are black, and the country could, or the company does not have one, suggesting that when this gentleman put in his paperwork, they denied his contract and chose a different bidder with a better proposal. And again, as I noted earlier, their suggestion is they do not, in fact, discriminate against African Americans or others.
Right. I mean, a lot of these, there are a number of different issues here. Obviously, the one gentleman who has this action against BP, I don't know whether what the specific details there are. I mean, I think there are two main issues that are going on. First, obviously, if Reverend Jackson feels that he needs to put more pressure on BP to have them at least assess what their diversity goals are and so forth, I think that's fine. I think, though, the other part of this approach, where they feel that it's important for Congress to come in and put a windfall profits tax on BP and some of these other companies, I just think is incredibly ill-advised, because I mean, I think it's just a failure to see how the market actually works. I think it's a failure of seeing how much focus is put into energy exploration and so forth.
Yeah.
Beforehand. So I mean, I think that it's kind of mixed messages as to what the
sure.
reverends are trying to do.
We'll move on to another topic. But, Callie, what we do know is when pressure is put on companies often, and we're seeing different language from BP now, as I said, roughly 600 U.S. distributors, none of which are black in the BP world. The company says it would like to find black-run companies to distribute gas regionally. One has to believe, while we don't know for certain, but one has to believe that that is part and parcel of the pressure being put on by Reverend Jackson and Sharpton.
No, absolutely. That is the case. I will say that I think that there may be a missed opportunity here, in that I think because gas is affecting all of us, as Marcelo has said, with, you know, $4 a gallon looking us in the face, this is an opportunity to broaden this with an emphasis on African Americans, of course, but to say, you know, everybody out here, particularly poor people, are being affected, and to draw in a really broad spectrum of support for something that people can get behind, because they can see what's happening at the gas tank. And so I really think that this is an opportunity for it to really be a rainbow coalition and to get some other folks involved. In much the same way that in the past that Reverend Jackson, when going to retrieve hostages or whatever, has really engendered all kinds of support across the board, even from folks mm-hmm. who might not personally support him, I think this campaign in that way could work
yes.
just as effectively.
And we should note he has always said that this affects the poor across the board, not just minorities. And he talks about those in the Appalachian Mountains and the like. All right, let's turn our attention to Duke University once again. The Duke University lacrosse player who was suspended for sending that memo that talked about wanting to kill a stripper and other vulgar language in it has been reinstated. Ryan McFadden has been reinstated by the school and will be able to rejoin the lacrosse team this fall. It is said that this by Duke University representatives have denoted that this, they believe, email was sent in jest. Marcelo, when we see the reinstatement and the quiet reinstatement of the team and the thought process that Duke has been very quiet about all of this, is this sending the right kind of message in your mind?
Well, this was a very ugly email. The question I have is whether this was sent over a university email account, for example. Clearly, the young man did not show any judgment here. I mean, the details of the email are really scary, ugly. The question really has to do with whether the university has used this opportunity to raise the level of discourse around the issues such as violence, such as the race issue in the original case, or whether this is a way of quieting and really silencing the opportunity to talk about these issues that haven't been completely addressed yet.
We should note, Callie, that this, in fact, was sent from the Students Duke account, and that Larry Mineta, who's the vice president of student affairs, said that the school believes that it was sent in jest. And that was part of the varying factors that led to them reinstating him, but also which led to the cancellation previously of the season for the lacrosse team.
Well, all I can say is it's so foul that we cannot repeat it on this air. And it's, I don't see the funny anywhere, across the board. So the fact that now it's been confirmed that it was sent from a university account to me is really disgusting. What price do people have to pay for doing this at a time when they're taking little kids out of school for bringing an aspirin? This guy can write this kind of stuff and still get all the rights and benefits of being a student. After all, playing on the lacrosse team, I assumed, was a privilege. It's not that, you know, nobody was denying him being his studenthood at Duke, but playing on the lacrosse team was something extra. So the fact that the university did not take this seriously, whether in quote-unquote jest or not, to me makes a huge statement about somebody's response to where women are, what violence is about, and what this overall global thing is about. Now, having said that, I believe that probably what is happening here is that with all of the controversy, with this increasing quote-unquote evidence coming out demonstrating to some that the accused guys on the team really were not guilty, that maybe there is some feeling that this will be okay if we reinstate them, because after all, there's no evidence, concrete evidence, to demonstrate that a rape did occur. But I don't care whether a rape occurred or not. This, to me, stands alone, and I don't think that he should be given the privilege of being reinstated, and I think that the university, in doing so, is making a statement that I find appalling.
Well, I mean, what I think we keep in mind is they say it is in jest because the student apparently was recreating some scene from some movie or something like that. A couple of things there. Remember, you know, last season's Duke season was they canceled it for one thing. So there's a punishment in a sense across the board there. The head coach was fired. We still don't know what the ultimate disposition is going to be in terms of the students involved. Callie brought up the point about, you know, the issues of women and so forth. What I think is rather striking is actually the solidarity that was actually demonstrated by the female lacrosse team there as well. So it's not completely it's not necessarily an issue of, you know, male female. It may most definitely be an issue of race. In terms of this one student, you know, they made this assessment that, you know, he particularly was not involved in the rape, and so was sort of a collateral question. And, you know, if they feel that it's best that they've allowed him to be reinstated, yeah. I'm not necessarily going to say that that's a bad idea from their point of view.
Literally with 2 minutes to go, let me take us back to our A segment, and that is the 97th annual NAACP convention, which will start in July 15th in the nation's capital. Marcelo, the idea we heard from Bruce Gordon, the invitation out to the president heretofore in his years in office has not spoken to the NAACP. Bruce Gordon has made overtures to try to have a better relationship with him. Do you think it important that the president take the olive branch and speak this year?
Well, I think it's important that the olive branch was offered. The question that remains to be seen is whether the president will show up and make a coherent statement about the administration around the issues we've been talking about, the issues that affect minorities in the United States today, jobs, education, energy. We need a major statement from our leadership about these concerns that we all share. And will we get it, or will we get more silence and more disengagement?
Callie, with a minute to go, it's interesting here with the idea that the president perhaps a few years ago would have faced a perhaps easier audience than he will probably face if he, in fact, takes the invitation.
Well, you know what? That's not the point. If Arnold Schwarzenegger can appear before the largest group of gay Republicans after having vetoed same-sex marriage, then, you know, the president is the president of everybody. And whether it's a rough crowd or not, I think you need to be there.
Robert George, 30 seconds.
I think he should go. I mean, in the past, you've had these issues, particularly I think with Julian Bond making various statements that the White House felt were insulting to the president. But I think given everything that's happened in the last year and Mr. Gordon's overtures, I think he should take up the invitation this time.
All right, Robert George, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, and Callie Crossey. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy Fourth.